This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bites, ladies and gents. We're talking about the bizarre rise of fast food fused with snack food. They're Instagram ready. They're dripping with calories. Everybody seems to be loving them. We're talking about whether or not you'd like to see them here, and the ones that you have seen, which ones did you like, and which ones would you like to see in the future? We've got some suggestions and some responses via Twitter. Arv.
Yeah, so this comes from Jaja. Says, I once put spicy surunding with my Nutella sandwich, which I can understand.
I like that.
Sounds good.
Those are a happy little accidents.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Retweet Everything says, pisang and pesto.
Well, pisang seemed to be doing pretty well a couple of years ago. The what was it? The cheese and the pisang goreng and cheese.
Yeah, they still have that. Yeah,
and everybody was like, "Ew, what's that?" And then they went to try it and went,
"There's
I like
one
it.
Just nearby our office in Tabantun that they sell this pisang goreng cheese thing. Still Isn't going it? On after 2 years. Yeah.
Well, they seem to be doing okay, don't they? Right. Next story then, Arv.
Yeah, so this is about, this is actually an article, a very long but interesting article from Quartz, talking about how if you want to make new tech, you should benchmark it against older adults. So not senior people specifically, but older adults, so maybe people in their 50s and above.
Like my mom.
Like our parents, even our grandparents are sitting next to them. And the snippet from the article sums it up perfectly because it says, the most useful devices aren't always gadgets that presume their ability. Instead, it's often technology that help the elderly stay connected with loved ones, remember to-do lists, get around, and grab convenient meals, which is arguably technology that could be used by any demographic. So, their main argument is that the problem at the moment is new tech is always based on younger consumers, and tech for older people, quote unquote, is kind of offensive. This includes all kinds of tech, like hearing aids and devices to break someone's fall, stuff that they have to wear if they have, less mobility, things like that. The article says, who would want to be reminded that they are not as sturdy and agile as their younger adults, or their younger adults, or even their former selves? These products can range from embarrassing to insane. Insulting. And that's true because I was thinking, I mean, you know, you mentioned like, you know, even our parents, grandparents, no one likes using something that looks like it was made specifically for them.
Yeah, we spoke about it a while ago, didn't we?
Yeah, we even touched on the, you know, bad designs for senior people.
Yeah.
But this is even for tech, like I said, for people 50 and above, you know, who aren't considered seniors yet. Sometimes the tech or the apps that are made for them sort of make them feel like they aren't able to perform as much as their younger counterparts. So Patricia Moore, she is a gerontologist and designer at the Industrial Designers Society of America, and she says that we have to stop acting like we have to design for elders. Her logic is that aging is a complex process, and older people aren't just a single blob all meshed together. Mm. They are divided and have as many segments as any other consumer. So the vision she gives is the example she gives is interesting because she says like vision loss can start after 40, but many young people also wear like spectacles or glasses. And 88 runners in the New York Marathon last year were above 75 years old.
Wow.
So you can't bracket older adults as one blob that is genderless and has no sort of like has no individual likings for themselves. Mm. You have to take them as any other consumer, like even like the younger ones. You would say like, you know, is it male, is it female, is it in teenagers, are they in their mid-20s, early 20s, that sort of thing. Examples of good design that she gives is food delivery apps, because we don't think of how the older generation uses it. It's normally built for like a fast-paced crowd. But the apps are very good for people who aren't as mobile as they used to be, so they're home, you know, they don't want to go out, maybe they don't drive, so they order the food to come to them. Same for ride hailing apps. People who don't drive anymore or cannot drive anymore, these apps are normally targeted for younger people, people on the move, people who want to get to work, but it's also very useful for people who cannot physically have their own vehicle anymore. And these apps don't specifically target themselves for older people, but they have a lot of older users. The trick is, so she says, is to flip those kinds of concepts in the way we design tech in the future. So even for medical devices, even for services that help older people, don't target it specifically for them. Let them have independence, agency, and use intuitive design. Because at the end of the day, they just want to use it for the same functions that younger people use it for. And if it works for older demographics or older adults, then the likelihood of it working for younger people is just as much, as opposed to the other way around. If you design just for young people, then you eliminate older people. If you design just for old people, then you eliminate younger users.
Mm.
The trick is to sort of design for an older age bracket and then move down, because it has the same functions, which is an interesting thing. I think it flips the way we think about tech, I think. It's especially
I totally process. Agree. Yeah. I think the ones who, you know, we've seen reports on, you know, like Malaysia Facebook users, for example, right? Or even just global stat.
Hmm.
It's not the young ones who are, you know, actively using Facebook as a tool.
Hmm.
It is the older generation that's actually actively using Facebook. My mom just got onto Instagram to promote her new business. And it's not something that I thought her. It's just something that she, you know, just felt, I guess, one day sitting at home wondering like, oh, there's so many people kind of, you know, selling stuff on this Instagram thing. And she got on it and she's, you know, selling, you know, her own kind of, you know, cookies and stuff and on Instagram. And I was surprised. So like, you know, it initially when I asked her what took you so long, is just that for her, it felt like, you know, it was so different because she's not used to it.
Mm.
But like, you know, and she doesn't use, it took her a while to use Waze because it was, again, a bit difficult for her to use Waze. But she can't use any of the ride hailing services because the interface is too much for her,
too complicated.
Too complicated because you know, you got to put the pin where you are and stuff like that. So maybe if, you know, ride hailing apps design where, you know, the interface is easy and simple and quick, you get a lot of users. Because I get a lot of my you know, family who are much older come to me and ask me, could you help me to book a ride?
Right.
They have the app in the phone,
but
they just don't know how to use it. So yeah, definitely, I believe that.
There's funny you should say that. There's an app in the UK that does something very similar. It's a ride-hailing app, but what you do is you say, I want to book a ride, and then what they do is the ride-hailing company calls you, says, okay, where are you?
Because that's the way that they're so used to, right? But yeah, they use technology at the back end, but they just do that one step, be like, let me call you.
Exactly. I mean, they already know where you are because of your GPS location, but they're like, that person on the other end just wants that familiarity of saying, oh, I'm stood outside this bank and there's a post office over there. Oh, and look, and Erica's just walking to do her shopping. Mm. You know, that kind of familiarity. Yeah.
But you know what's interesting is that you said the app looks too complicated for the ride hailing, even for some e-wallets and stuff. So I just started using e-wallets maybe about less than 2 months ago.
Mm.
And the reason I didn't use it is because I felt the thing, it didn't look complicated, it looked messy.
Yep.
And I just felt like, you know, going up
too
to the...
Things.
Yeah, too many things. I was like, you know, I'm not interested in figuring it out. So maybe if we followed the Quartz article or Patricia Moo and her logic, if the app was designed for older adults, it was easy for older adults to use, maybe younger people would use it as much as well. Like even people like me, early 30s, I didn't want to use the app because I felt it was too messy. There's too many things going on. Like, do I buy the deals? Do I use the wallet? Like, what am I supposed to do first? Mm. But if they had targeted older adults first, I would have looked at it and gone like, oh yeah, this looks simple enough. I'm going to do it.
I mean, and some of the local car hailing apps started off being very simple, you know, and everything, the interface was really easy to navigate and to use. And over time, as they've become more popular, new features have been added on one thing. It has become overly complicated, even to a point now where you can put in a promo code on some of these things. And then once you've put that promo code in, the place that you've said you want to go to, your destination, has been removed. And you then have to re-put it in. And for some people, they forget about that. Or they forget that it can sometimes switch to paying by cash or paying by card.
Mm.
And it can change the destination of stuff like where your food has been delivered. All these little things shouldn't really be a problem.
It should be more.
This is a software solution.
Yeah,
right. We need to wrap up, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
This has been a great show. We've loved talking about food, of course, ladies and gents.
And now we have to go get lunch.
And now we have to go and get lunch. I have no idea what I'm going to get. Pisang goreng.
Boya.
Maggie. No, I'm not doing that.
Since you mentioned that, Sim actually shared like four suggestions.
He did,
There's like orange slices in noodles, like Maggie.
No.
There's Oreos dipped in belacan or sambal.
No.
I
maybe.
Maybe.
No.
I could go for
come
that.
Come on.
Maybe.
Avocados in noodle soup.
No.
It just looks like avocados in noodle soup.
No.
That's it.
We are moving on from this. No, we're not having this. Sim, what are you doing?
Chocolates,
and the final one?
Chocolates in what looks like banh mi or like Maggi or some kind of noodles.
Yeah, yeah. No.
Oh dear. Time for us to wrap up. So that was the story, of course, that we started off with. Instagram ready, dripping with calories, inside the curious world of fast food, snack food fusion. What stuff would you like to see fused together here in Malaysia? That's the question we asked.
And then we talked about a survey done by Movinga on the best cities for entrepreneurs.
Then we finish with using older adults to benchmark new tech.
That's all the time we have for today. Don't forget, coming up after the 1 o'clock news, it's the Breakfast Grill replay. Private equity investments have grown a lot in the past few years and is no longer the quiet cousin of the investment world. But has there been too much dry powder chasing too few deals recently? The Breakfast Grill spoke with Tan Chow Yin of Diamond Private Equity about the local private equity landscape, recent deal flow, and the extent of Bursa stocks ripe for delisting. That's all coming up after the 1 o'clock news. My name is Rich Bradbury. On behalf of Jeff Sandu and, of course, Arvind Yuvaraj, you've been listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM. If you missed any part of the show, don't forget you can download the podcast wherever you normally get it from. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.